Hello, Sun Sounds listeners. This is Andy Bombeck, which means, once again, it's time for the Children's Story Hour. And as always, I'm glad you could join me today for a good variety of children's stories. Like always, the first half hour, I'll be reading picture books. And then the second half hour, I'm going to continue with the novel that I've been reading now close to 3 months, titled Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. But first, let's begin today's program with the picture book titles. I'm going to start off with a book titled Steve Goes to Carnival. And then it's Trouble Dog, From Shelter Dog to Conservation Hero. The Magic in a Smile. Marowan's Journey. And if we have time, I'll finish up the first half hour with Windows to the World. So it should be a lot of fun. Let's get started with our first picture book today, titled Steve Goes to Carnival. It's a Saturday afternoon at the zoo in Rio. The jaguars pace in their enclosure. The elephant stretches out her trunk for an ice cream cone. The howler monkeys hoot and chatter, and the sloths sway slowly from side to side. In the evening, Antonio, the zookeeper, feeds the animals. The anteater flicks up ants with his long, sticky tongue. The elephant trumpets greedily, and the old lion licks his lips. Antonio loves all the animals in the zoo, but he loves Steve most of all, and Steve loves Antonio. "Hello, my friend," cries Antonio. He sets down a bucket of bamboo shoots and his little yellow radio. Steve switches the radio on and turns up the volume. Antonio and Steve love all kinds of music, but they love jazz most of all. They sit back and listen to the sound of a saxophone drifting up into the night sky. After Antonio has left, Steve feels the quiet of the night. He lifts the latch of the cage door and out it swings. Steve clambers up and over the zoo wall to look for Antonio. At the tram stop outside the zoo, Steve finds a wide-brimmed hat. It is the perfect disguise. Steve waves down a tram and clambers aboard. The old yellow tram shudders down the hillside, past the favelas, and into the city. Steve tumbles out of the tram and onto the crowded street. Fireworks soar into the sky. It is carnival time in Rio. Dancers in sparkling sequins and feather headdresses shimmy along the avenue. The air shakes with the thud of bass drums, the rattle of trombones, the honk of trombones, and the shrill of samba whistles. "Feliz Carnival!" the sambistas cry out to Steve. "Feliz Carnival!" cries Steve as he heads off to look for Antonio. He wends his way through the street, stalls selling black bean soup, coconut sweets, and chocolate bonbons. Suddenly, Steve stops and listens. Above the noise of carnival, he hears the whoop and holler of a saxophone coming from a jazz club across the street. The doorman at the Blue Jaguar Jazz Club smiles at Steve. "Entra, senor," he says, as he waves Steve inside. Steve pauses to greet the elegant hostess, and then he hurries across the room. A jazz quartet is playing. The piano tinkles, the double bass pounds, the saxophone wails, and the singer hums and trills. The saxophonista tips his hat at Steve. "Antonio," cries Steve. "Aha, my friend," replies Antonio. "You found me." At that moment, a beautiful dancer with zigzag hair steps onto the dance floor. Antonio swings his saxophone high into the air, and the band plays. Steve bows and takes the dancer by the hand. They twist and twirl across the floor. Around and around and around they go. Whoosh! Steve's hat flies off his head. "Opa, a gorilla!" cries the elegant hostess. But the beautiful dancer does not blink an eye. She picks up Steve's hat and takes him by the hand. Antonio blows a long, silvery note that floats through the jazz club. Around and around spin the dancers, twisting and turning, reeling and whirling into the night. The music rises high above the jazz club over the Carnival City and into a new day. Trouble Dog, from Shelter Dog to Conservation Hero. Tucker never meant to be trouble. He just loved to play. When no one else had time for fun, he made his own. Romping, chasing, grabbing, leaping, chewing, crashing. So many families returned Tucker to the animal shelter that the attendant started telling visitors, "Not this dog, he's trouble." For months, Tucker sat alone in his cage, watching everyone pass him by. Until Laura. "Trouble?" Laura said. "Maybe he's the right kind of trouble." She held out a ball. Tucker quivered with excitement. She bounced the ball. Tucker leaped against his cage. She took Tucker into the yard, where he ignored other dogs, people, and even food. Everything but that ball. "I'll take him," Laura said. Over the next few days, Laura petted Tucker, fed him, and played with him. He loved his new home, but when Laura didn't have time for fun, rip, splat, crack. "You're definitely trouble," Laura said, but she smiled and ruffled his fur. "Let's put that energy of yours to work. I have a special job for you." She led Tucker past a row of empty cinder blocks. "What's here, Tucker? What do you smell?" Tucker didn't smell anything interesting. He kept glancing up at Laura to try to understand. Then suddenly, a strange new smell. "That's it! You found it!" Laura held out his favorite toy, Tug of War. Tucker growled and twirled and yanked. Laura laughed and yanked right back. He could tug as hard as he wanted. No one had ever played with him like that. Over the next few days, Laura led Tucker past the blocks again and again. Each time he came to a new scent, she played with him. Soon, he pranced with excitement whenever he saw the blocks. "You're a fast learner," Laura said. "I'm going to make it harder." She moved the blocks into different patterns. She added other strong smells. Then she hid the flower within the blocks. Tucker's nose never failed, and Laura played with him every time. She began hiding other things. A tortoise, not for shaking. A snail, not for eating. Even grizzly bear poop, not for rolling in. "I knew you were right. You were the right kind of trouble," Laura said after a few weeks. "You're going to help me save wildlife." Tucker's first job was to find rosy wolf snails in Hawaii. The snails didn't belong on the islands and ate the snails that did belong there. They had to go. "This won't be easy," a conservationist told Laura. "Rosy wolf snails are small and mostly hidden under leaves." "No problem," Laura said. "Tucker has learned their scent. His nose will tell him where they are." Tucker vibrated with excitement, his eyes locked on Laura. She stood very still. Then she held out her hands, fingers, splayed. That was the signal. Go to work, she said. Tucker bounded forward, tail high, nose sweeping back and forth, back and forth. He zigzagged across the ground, snuffled under leaves, raised his nose again, and kept searching until there. He sat, caught Laura's eye, and pointed his nose toward his first snail. Yay, good boy! Laura kissed the top of Tucker's head. He licked her face, and she laughed. I knew you could do it. You're a conservation dog now. After that, Tucker led researchers to the scat of wild animals around the world. Moon bears in China, mountain lions in Chile, and elephants in the jungles of Myanmar. So scientists could learn about the animals without disturbing them. He inspected boats for harmful mussels, pinpointed tiny invasive weeds, and detected beetles that were destroying millions of trees. He helped endangered turtles by sniffing out nests they'd buried underground. Now, conservationists could protect each one of those nests. Tucker was a success, but then they went to look for cheetah scat in Zambia. Week after week went by with no luck. They walked more than 10 miles a day and temperatures over 100 degrees. Everyone was miserable. Everyone but Tucker. Each morning, he looked at Laura with bright, expectant eyes, ready for the search. That's what keeps me going, Laura said, giving Tucker a hug. For you, this is just plain fun. Finally, one day, Tucker sat under a tree, pointed his nose toward the trunk, and jumped. He's showing us it's high, Laura said. Could it be up there? As far as we know, cheetahs don't poop in trees, one of the conservationists said. Tucker's awfully sure, Laura said. Let's check. So the researchers climbed the tree. Nothing up here, one called down. But Tucker kept pointing, glancing back and forth between Laura and the tree. There! Keep looking, Laura said. I trust Tucker. Found it, one of the conservationists shouted down finally. Yay, Tucker, Laura cried. I knew you were right. Tucker ran in circles, his toy in his mouth. The next time Tucker signaled that he'd found cheetah scat, and the researchers couldn't see it, they kept searching and eventually discovered it underground, buried by dung beetles. Tucker's a hero now. He's still romping, leaping, and crashing, but his unstoppable energy and playfulness are helping save wildlife. He has fun running around and around, following scents only he can smell. When he finds his target, everyone celebrates, whether he's in the field or helping teach people about conservation. Best of all, he has a forever home where he almost never gets in trouble. The magic in a smile. Max hadn't started off the day at his best. Being used to his father's patience waking him up, today he found it would be his grandma, who, all of a sudden, would turn on the lights, forcing him to wake up in fits and stars. In a bad mood, he rose and popped downstairs for breakfast, feeling kind of grumpy. At the table, he came across his second disappointment. He wanted to have cereal, which is his favorite, but there wasn't any left. And so he had to eat a sandwich instead. Since he didn't like that sandwich at all, it took very long to finish it. And Grandma reacted by asking him if he was still a little baby. He really hated it when people said that to him. At school, he was feeling a bit edgy and couldn't focus on the task he had to do. He couldn't get anything right. At lunchtime, while sitting in the school's cafeteria, Max found out that fish was on the menu, and how he hated that yucky fish. Yuck! It took him ages to finish the dish, and when he did, he barely had time to play. Max felt more angry and edgy as the day went by. Finally, later that afternoon, Max's anger exploded when Bertha took his toy from him. His head, which was his thinking machine, couldn't help it. And all the rage and anger that had been rising up during the day burst out at once. Ouch! And he bit her. Max grabbed Bertha's arm and bit it, leaving a mark on it. That day, the teacher suspended him. When Mom and Dad came by to pick him up, they found out what had happened and were very upset with him. Luckily, today was the day the family was visiting his great-grandfather, who had caught a cold. Max loved him so dearly and really enjoyed listening to his stories. He liked the way his great-grandfather treated him as a grown-up boy. While Mom and Dad were distracted, his great-grandfather, who noticed even the tiniest detail, asked, "What is it, Max? Did you have a bad day?" "Yes, I think today was the worst day of my life." "Ah, I've had days like that myself. Can I ask you something? Did you ever notice what happens when somebody laughs? Did you notice what happens to everyone who is around someone who's laughing? I don't understand what you're trying to say." Then the grandfather burst out laughing as if he had just seen the funniest thing in the whole world. And soon after, Max couldn't help but join him in his laughter. Laughter is contagious. You understand it now? "It's true, though. I wasn't feeling like laughing at all. You made me." "Well, little friend, everybody can help in his or her own way. Did you know every single smile is magical?" "How do you know all these things?" "Well, it is time that teaches you, Max. Also, I know when we are angry, it works exactly the same way. Those around us notice it, and things don't work out as nicely as they should when we feel edgy. Now that you've learned these little secrets, would you like to start the day over?" "Why not?" answered Max, a bit scared. His great-grandpa drew some kind of powder from his pocket and blew it at the boy's face. And right then, as if by magic, his grandma woke him up in fits and starts by turning the lights on all of a sudden. Still feeling a bit surprised, Max drew a smile on his face, and his grandma gave him an enormous kiss. Feeling joyful, he rose from bed and popped downstairs for breakfast. As his favorite cereal ran out, he gladly accepted the sandwich to eat. Instead, Grandma was so happy. She praised Max and told him how every day that went by, he looked older and more mature. At school, he finished his task soon, as he felt joyful and could focus easily on them, and the teacher even rewarded him for it. At lunchtime, he made a great effort eating that fish he didn't like and finished early. Everything was running smoothly. Great-grandpa had answers to everything. That afternoon, when Bertha grabbed his toy, he smiled brightly, told her he was playing with that toy at the moment, and took it back. His teacher praised him in front of his classmates, and when Mom and Dad came to pick him up, they were very happy with his attitude. As he knew well, that same afternoon, they were visiting his great-grandfather, who had caught a cold. As soon as Max and his great-grandpa saw each other, they started laughing out loud, and soon Mom and Dad joined too. The four of them were now laughing. While Mom and Dad were distracted, Max's great-grandpa whispered in his ear, "So, how was your day?" "You were right about everything, Grandpa. There's magic in a smile. It makes difficult things look simple. You bet, little one." Marwan's Journey. I take giant steps, even though I am small. 1, 2, 3, crossing the desert. I walk, and my footsteps leave a trace of ancient stories, the songs of my homeland, and the smell of tea and bread, jasmine and earth. I walk, and I don't know when I will get there or where I am going. I carry a heavy bag. My mended clothing, a prayer book, a notebook, a pencil, a photograph of my mommy. Sometimes in the cold night, I cry out to her in my dreams. She comes with her black hair streaming and tucks me in with her flower-soft hands. She says, "Marwan, keep going. Walk and walk and walk." And I keep walking. I remember a house. Mommy lit the fire when night fell, and Daddy told stories of our homeland. There was a garden, a cat, and a ray of sunlight that shone every morning on my pillow. One night they came. The darkness grew colder, deeper, darker, and swallowed up everything. My house, my garden, my homeland. After that, we walked for one day, two, three, hundreds of people, thousands of feet, one in front of the other. 1, 2, 3. A line of humans like ants crossing the desert. Marwan, keep walking. Don't look back. And I don't look back. Ahead lies the border. They say that it is an infinite line that separates the desert from the sea. Another country, another house, another language. Stories of other homelands. One day I will return. I will not hesitate. I will plant a garden with my hands full of flowers and hope. I will build my house with the cement of my sure steps. I will let in the rays of sunlight that come through the windows and paint the walls with happiness. Every night I will pray that the night never, never, never goes so dark again. And I'm going to finish up the first half hour of today's program with Windows to the World. My Nono is getting old. Not dinosaur old, but almost. These days, he's wobbly on the ladder. He totters under the weight of thick albums, and he strains his eyes through his magnifying glass. Looking after stamps is a big responsibility. Monday to Saturday, Nono sorts through his gazillion stamps. But I love Sundays best because there's no sorting to do. Aren't these wonderful, Alexander? Come. Stamps are windows to the world. Every stamp has a story to tell. Tell me a stamp story, Nono. Which one? You know which one. I snuggle into Nono. He clears his throat and begins.
Well, the world's very first stamp was the penny black. It was the first day of May 1840, back when messages were still sent by carrier pigeon or on horseback.
We leaf through the crinkly pages of his albums.
These will be yours someday, Alexander. When you have something special, it's good to share, he says,
patting me on the shoulder. I think I know what someday means because it makes me feel all wiggly inside. But there's another thing. I don't want to hurt Nono's feelings, but what if I don't want to be a collector? When my school teacher mentions the Philatelic Museum, I ask Nono whether he knows about it.
Of course, it's the home, the heaven of stamps. It's impossible not to love the quiet dignity of it, the musty smell of printed paper, the gleaming vitrines, the tickling of temperature gauges on the walls.
I have no idea what Nono is talking about. But when Nono takes me there, I understand. Inside, it's neither too hot nor too cold. Stamps are safe and snug behind glass. Friendly guards smile in every room. And here, everyone can enjoy them, not just me. We even get to meet the curator. And when she asks about his stamps, Nono glows. That's when I have an idea. Sadly, Nono doesn't like it. Isn't sharing with me and sharing with the world the same thing, I say, patting his shoulder. Nono gathers his albums and hides. I doubt Nono's teacher ever talked about sharing in school. Imagine your precious stamps sitting alongside our museum collection's penny black, I read to a closed door. But Nono still won't come out. When you have something special, it's good to share, I whisper through the keyhole. Finally, I hear Nono's slippers shuffle, and his door clicks open. Now that Nono's stamps have found a home at the Philatelic Museum, Monday to Saturday, Nono runs guided tours. He no longer strains his eyes, totters under thick albums, or wobbles on ladders. But I love Sundays best because that's when he runs tours with me. We delight crowds with the penny black story. And after Nono says, stamps are windows to the world. I don't miss a beat. Every stamp has a story to tell. Now, both our names are spelled in golden letters next to the word philatelist. How am I a philatelist, I ask. A philatelist is someone who looks after stamps. Like you, I ask, and you, Alexander, he says, patting my shoulder. When you have something special, I chime in, it's good to share. And this is just a reminder, my name is Andy Bobick, and I hope you're enjoying the Children's Story Hour. And as I mentioned at the beginning of today's program, for the second half hour, I'm going to continue reading the novel that I've been reading now for about almost 3 months, titled Angus, Thongs, and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. I am a facsimile of a sham of a fax of a person. Georgia Nicholson's life is far from simple. Her cat, Angus, is the size of a small Labrador. Her three-year-old sister may have peed somewhere in her room. And her best friend, Jazz, thinks she looks like an alien just because she accidentally shaved off her eyebrows. Enter the sex god. This just might turn out to be the most fabity fab year ever. Okay, last week, when the sex god met with Elizabeth's best friend, Jazz, he wanted to know if Jazz still likes Tom, because Tom still likes her. Of course, Elizabeth is happy about this because she loves the sex god. Jazz gave Elizabeth an apology note for meeting the sex god, but Elizabeth isn't accepting it. Jazz likes the sex god's brother, Tom. And that's where I left off last week. April, the snogging report. Tuesday, April the 6th, 5 p.m. Had a game of tennis against Lucy Doyle from the fifth form, and I beat her. I am a genius. 6:30 p.m. Practicing tennis against our wall at home, but it's hopeless. Angus gets the ball and then takes it a few feet away from me and guards it. I go to get it, and he waits until I can nearly get it, and then he walks off with it again. I manage to hit him on the head with my tennis racket, but he doesn't seem to feel pain. 7 p.m. Phoned Jazz. It's quite relaxing not having Dad around. No one bellowing, "Get off that bloody phone!" I'm beginning not to remember what he looks like. So there's a silver lining to every cloud. Jazz's mom answered the phone, and I asked to speak to Jazz. She came down from her bedroom. "Jazz, I've got a good plan." "Oh, no." "No, you'll like it." "Why?" "Because it's brilliant, and also because it allows you to pay back your debt to me." "Go on, then." "Well, you know, you said Robbie didn't know he was engaged, but Lindsay goes around with an engagement ring on." "Yes?" "Well, if she only wears it at school and then takes it off when she sees him, well, that means that she likes him more than he likes her." "I suppose." "Of course it does. He must be getting tired of her by now. What on earth does he see in her?" "Well, she's supposed to be quite clever. I think she's applied for Oxford." "So she's a swat. That's no reason to like her. Anyway, learning stuff is not clever. Just because I can't remember the Planignet line doesn't make me not clever." "Well, no, I suppose." "Exactly. You have quite a lot of trouble with quadratic equations as well." "Yes, all right, Jazz." "And you can't do the pluperfect tense." "Yes, I know. But what I'm saying is, you're hopeless at German." Herr Kammer said he's never known anyone so bad at it in all his years of teaching. "Look, Jazz, can we just get back to the plan? What I think we should do is to stalk Lindsay." "Stalk her?" "Yes." "What, follow her around and then phone her up and ask her what color panties she has got on?" "No, not that bit. Just the bit where we keep her under observation." "Why? What's the point?" "Well, the point is, I will then be able to tell whether Robbie likes her or not." "Why do I have to be involved?" "Because A, you are my friend, and B, it looks less suspicious because we're always hanging around together, and C, my mom is going away with Libby in a few weeks, and you could come and stay the night, and we could invite Tom." "When do we start stalking? That's my girl." Friday, April the 16th. Operation Stalking Lindsay begins Friday night. 4:15 p.m. We had to hang around at the back of the science block after final bell. Old swatty knickers, Lindsay, was chatting to Hawkeye. We could see them laughing together. How sad. Fancy having to laugh with a teacher. Then, while Lindsay got her coat, we crept along the narrow alleyway that runs between the science block and the main school building. It's disgusting down there, full of fag ends from Jackie and company. but if you follow it all the way along, you end up a bit beyond the main gate. The tricky part is getting past Elvis's hut. I'd already made myself public enemy number one with him by putting a plastic skeleton with his hat on and a pipe in its mouth in his chair in his hut. I don't know how he knew it was me, but he did. Anyway, we got to Elvis's hut, and he wasn't about, so we shot across and into the last bit of the alleyway. We were wearing all black and had hats on. It was very French resistance. We got to the end just as Lindsay, the stalkee, passed by. She looked at her watch, and you could clearly see the flash of her ring. 5:15 p.m., outside Lindsay's posh house, the U's. The house is all on one level, which means that Lindsay's bedroom would be on the ground floor, which means we might be able to see in through the window. Tee-hee-hee. First things first, though. Time for a nourishing meal. 6:30 p.m., double chips and Coke. Yum, yum. 6:45 p.m., stalky spotted, leaving the front room. Did not reappear. We suspect she has gone to a room to start the long, desperate job of making herself look okay to go out with Robbie. 6:58 p.m. We decided to risk going round the back of the house. I whispered to Jazz, "I hope they haven't got a cat." And she said, "Don't you mean a dog?" And I said, "Have you met Angus?" There was a side path, and we went really carefully down it. We had nearly reached the back garden when a head popped up from behind next door's hedge. A really bald head, like Uncle Eddie's. Quick as a flash, Jazz said, "Shh, we're giving Lindsay a big surprise." She winked at the man, and he disappeared. We crept on round the back of the house. Lindsay's bedroom faced onto the garden, and she had her curtains half pulled back so you could see in. Her bedroom was a nightmare of frilly white things, frilly pillows, frilly bedspread, Teletubby hot water bottle cover. Lindsay put on a tape, and Jazz and I looked at one another. It was Genesis. Jazz mimed being sick. We had to keep bobbing our heads down if she turned directly to face the window. She disappeared off through another door, and we could hear sort of gurgling noises. I said, "She's got an en-suite bathroom. That's very bad feng shui." Jazz said, "Why?" And I said, "I don't know, but it's very bad. You have to have about 50 goldfish to make it okay again." "Have you seen her alarm clock? It's got a sleepy face on it." Lindsay emerged from the bathroom with her hair all scraped back from her face and wearing a bra and a thong. I don't understand thongs. What is the point of them? I tried one of Mum's that she uses for aerobics. Well, she is supposed to use it for aerobics, but she only went once. She said that she nearly knocked herself out during the running in one place because her breast got out of hand. Anyway, I tried her thong on, and it felt ridiculous. They just go up your bum as far as I can tell. Then I saw something even more grotesque. Lindsay didn't have any hair on her womanly parts. What had she done with it? She couldn't have shaved it off, could she? I thought of the state of my legs the time I had shaved them. I felt quite faint. Lindsay was so skinny. At least I filled my bra. Then, before our eyes, the stalkee did two things that were very significant. One, she took off her ring and kissed it. Two, she got some sort of pink rubber things and put them in her bra underneath her breast. The rubber things pushed up her breast and made it look like she had a cleavage. "What a swizz!" I said to Jazz. "I bet you Robbie doesn't know about that." But I noticed that I did not have Jazz's full attention. She was looking over my shoulder at Mr. Baldy Man, who had reappeared, peering at us over his fence. What is it with neighbors? Don't they have lives of their own? He seemed a bit suspicious, so I said as naturally as I could, "She's certainly playing her music very loudly. She hasn't heard us tapping on her window." "Do it again, Jazz." Jazz looked a bit stunned, but fortunately had the presence of mind to do some mime. She mimed tapping on the window. Then she mimed waving at Lindsay, who fortunately had gone back to the en suite. And then she mimed hysterical laughter. "It's very tiring, this stalking business. But we seemed to satisfy Mr. Baldy Man because he disappeared again, and we crept round to the front of the house and along to the big hedge next door. We hid just inside next door's driveway to wait for Lindsay to come out. 7:40 p.m. Brr, bit chilly. At last, the front door opened and Lindsay came out with her hair up, mistake, and in a black midi, mistake, for long streak of water type person. We huddled back into the shadows of the hedge as she passed and gave her a few minutes before we followed. When she got to the main street, she stood under a street lamp and got out her compact to look at herself. Instead of running, screaming home, she snapped the compact shut and walked on. Suddenly, I had the feeling that we were doing something wrong. Up until now, I had been caught up in my French resistance fantasy. But what if I found out something I didn't want to know? What if she met Robbie and it was quite obvious that he really liked her? Could I stand it? Did I want to see him kissing her? I said to Jazz, "Maybe we should go now." And Jazz said, "What? After all this? No way. I want to see what happens next." 7:50 p.m. Outside the Odeon, Robbie was waiting. My heart went all wobbly. He looked so cool. Why wasn't he mine? Lindsay went up to him. The moment of truth. I wanted to yell out, "She has bit of pink rubber down her bra, and she wears a thong." I held my breath and Jazz's hand. She whispered, "Get off, you leaser." Then Lindsay put her face forward and Robbie kissed her. 8 p.m. Walking home, eating more chips, I said, "What sort of kiss do you think it was? Was there actual lip contact? Or was it lip to cheek or lip to corner of the mouth?" "I think it was lip to corner of the mouth, but maybe it was lip to cheek." "It wasn't full frontal snogging, though, was it?" "No." "I think she went for full frontal, and he converted it into lip to corner of mouth." "Yes." "He didn't seem keen, though, did he?" "No." Didn't you think so either? "No." "No, neither did I." Outside Jazz's gate, 8:40 p.m. I said, "The facts are, A, she doesn't wear her ring when she's out with him, so that makes it clear that she says they're engaged, but they aren't. And B, he doesn't really like her because he didn't do full frontal with her." Jazz undid her gate. "Yes, right. See you tomorrow. Don't forget about the sleepover." Midnight. So the plot thickens. All I have to do is to get rid of Lindsay, convince Robbie I am the woman of his dreams, stop Mum splitting up the home, grow bigger breasts, and have plastic surgery on my nose, and I have cracked it. Thursday, April 29th, 6:30 p.m. Phone rang, and I answered it. A strange voice said, "G'day. Is that Georgie?" I was a bit formal. It might be a dirty phone call. I had had one of those from a phone box in Glasgow. This bloke with a Scottish accent kept saying, "What color, pa?" And then the pips would go, And I'd say, "I'm sorry, what did you say?" And then he'd start again, "What color panties?" Pip, 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 pip. Eventually, he managed to say, "What color panties have you got on?" And then the line went dead. So you can't be too careful. Well, this strange echoey voice said, "It's your dad. I'm calling from Wangamatata." Well, I was a bit surprised, and I said, hello, Dad. He was all enthusiastic and keen. "How's school?" "Oh, you know, school. Is everyone all right?" "Yes, Angus got next door's guinea pig." "Did he give it back?" "Well, he did when I hit him with my tennis racket." "And Libby?" "Well, she can say tosser now." "Who the hell taught her that?" "I don't know." "Well, you should take better care of her. She's not my bloody daughter." "Don't swear at me." "I only said bloody." "That's swear. Look, get your mom on the phone. This is costing me £1 a minute." "She's not here." "Where is she?" "Oh, I don't know. She's always out." "Well, tell her I called." "Okay." There was a bit of silence then. His voice sounded even weirder when he spoke again. "I wish you were all here. I miss you." I just went, "Yeah." I wish parents wouldn't do that, you know, make you feel like crying and hitting them at the same time. May. I use it to keep my balls still. Tuesday, May the 4th, 8:10 a.m. Felt a bit sort of down in the dumps when I woke up. I'd had a dream that my dad had grown a Wolf Harris beard. But it wasn't a beard, really. It was Angus clinging to his chin. Assembly, math, physics. There is not one part of today that is worth being alive for. 4:30 p.m. Home, exhausted from laughing. My ribs hurt. Slim has made me be on cloakroom duty for the next term. But I don't care. It was worth it. Well, here's what happened. It was during double physics, and it was just one of those afternoons when you can't stop laughing and you feel a bit hysterical. For most of the lesson, I had been yelling, "Jawa! Hair Commandant!" and clicking my heels together every time Hair Kamer asked if we understood what he had been explaining. We were doing the molecular structure of atoms and how they vibrate. Herr Kamer was illustrating his point with the aid of some billiard balls on a tea towel on his desk. Well, it was giving me the giggles anyway, and then I put my hand up because I had thought of a good joke. I put my hand up with the finger pointing forward like in "Who Ate All the Pies?" And when Herr Kamer said yes, I said, "Herr Kamer, what part does the tea towel play in the molecular structure?" That's when Herr Kamer made his fateful mistake. He said, "Ach no, I merely use the tea towel to keep my balls still." It was pandemonium. I could not stop laughing. You know when you really, really should stop laughing because you will get into dreadful trouble if you don't? But you still can't stop. Well, I had that. I had to be practically carried to Slim's office. Outside her office, I did my best to get a grip. And I thought I had just about stopped and was under control when I knocked on the door and she said, "Come." In my head, I was thinking, "Please, please, don't ask me anything about it. Just let it go. Please talk about something else. Just don't ask me about it. Please, please." Slim was all trembly and jellyoid. "Can you tell me, Georgia, what is quite so amusing about Herr Kamer's experiment on the vibration of atoms?" I tried. God knows I tried. "Well, Miss Simpson, it's just that he used a tea towel." "He used a tea towel?" "Yes. He used a tea towel to keep his balls still." And then I was off again. midnight. Bloody funny, though. Thursday, May 27th, tennis tournament, 2:30 p.m. Through to the semifinals. Beautiful sunny day. I think I will be a Wimbledon champion after all. White suits me. All the gang are cheering me on, and this is very freaky-deaky and karmic and weird, but if I win my semi against Christy Walsh, upper fifth, I will play Lindsay in the final. How weird is that? Pretty weird, that's what. Lindsay is such a boring player. I'm sure I could beat her. She plays by the book, baseline follow through to the net. But she hasn't met Mighty Lob, me, yet. Okay, if I beat her, that must mean I am meant to have Robbie. Lindsay has white frilly knickers on under her tennis skirt. Not the thong, thank goodness. Otherwise, Miss Stamp might have had an outburst of lesbian lust and put me off my game. I think my shorts are much more stylish. They look like I've just remembered I'm playing in a tennis final, and I've just grabbed something and thrown it on in an attractive way. 3:30 p.m. I won the first set, and now I'm serving for the second and the match. I feel pretty good. I'm a bit hot, but I feel confident about my serve. Rosie and Ellen and Jules and Jazz and all of my year are going mental, chanting my name and easy, easy. Hawkeye keeps telling them to be quiet. She is the umpire. Worst luck. But even she can't make me lose. Ha, 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 ha. I am ruler of the universe. Robbie is mine for the plucking. First serve, an ace. Yes, yes, yes. Hawkeye says, 15 love. Second serve, a brief rally, and then a cunning, slicing cross-court forehand from me. Hawkeye says, 30 love. Third service, whiz. Oh, yes, another ace. Christy was nowhere. What a slacker. Hawkeye says, 40 love. The whole court is hushed as I serve for the match. I take my place behind the baseline. Jazz is playing nervously with her fringe. I look at her. She stops. I throw the ball up and bring my racket down, putting a bit of topspin on it. Christy doesn't even try to get it. Ace! Hawkeye announces through tight lips, game, set, and match to Georgia Nicholson. Yes, victory! I fall to my knees like McEnroe, and the crowd is going mad. Full of euphoria, I fling my racket high up into the air. It curves and falls down and hits Hawkeye right on the head. She is knocked off her umpire chair, unconscious. In bed, 8 p.m. I can't believe it. Hawkeye was only unconscious for about a minute, but I was made to forfeit the match. Christy plays Lindsay. I couldn't bear to watch. More to the point, I wasn't allowed to watch. I had to go and tidy all the gym mats. Lindsay won the cup. I don't know what this means karmically. I don't think I believe in God anymore. 11 p.m. The only way I will believe in God is if something really bloody great happens to me soon. June, pajama party. Friday, June the 4th, the pajama party sleepover. 5 p.m. Mom will not get going. Why is she so slow? Libby still has not got any knickers on. I offered to put them on her, and Mom said, oh, would you, love? Thanks. I cannot find my eyebrow tweezers anywhere. You haven't seen them, have you? I remember they were in my pencil case. No, but I think I saw Libby with them. Damn, they could be anywhere. Libby decided that knickers on was a game, and I chased her around for ages before I could get hold of her. Then, when I was putting her knickers on, she was stroking my hair, going, purr, purr, nice pussycat. Do you want some milk, tosser? I think she thinks Tosser is like a name. Once I got her dressed, I raced upstairs and got the tweezers, then put them in Angus's basket. Fortunately, he was out murdering birds, or he would have eaten them. Then I shouted to Mom, "Hey, Mom, guess where your tweezers are? Come and see." Mom came out of the bedroom, and I pointed to the cat basket. She said, "Honestly, thanks, love. Right now, I think that's everything. We can get off now, Libby." She grabbed Libby, who was struggling and licking her face. Libby said, "Bad, bad, Mommy, stealing Libby." As they went through the door, Mom said, "You'll be okay, won't you? I'll be back late tomorrow. Eat something sensible and don't stay up too late." She went through the door and then came back a moment later. "Don't even think about doing anything to your hair." 6 p.m. Rosie was the first to arrive. She said, "Sven is going to come at about 11:30 after his restaurant shift finishes." I said, "What have you got up to with him?" She said, six and a bit of seven. We have this scoring system for kissing and so on from 1 to 10. Number 1, holding hands. Number 2, arm around. Number 3, goodnight kiss. Number 4, kiss lasting over 3 minutes without a breath. Number 5, open mouth kissing. Number 6, tongues. Number 7, upper body fondling outdoors. Number 8, upper body fondling indoors in bed. Number 9, below waist activity. And number 10, the full Monty. And unfortunately, this is where I'm going to have to stop today because we are out of time. I hope that everyone enjoyed today's program as much as I did. I want to say hi to all the listeners out there, and I want to encourage everyone to tune in next week when I continue with the interesting novel titled Angus, Thongs, and Full Frontal Snogging, Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. Until then, I hope everyone has a great day and a fantastic week. So long and take care, everyone. Goodbye.